Welcome back. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. In a story from investigative reporter Lucas DePriel, it shows a lobbyist given the edit pen on environmental regulations. It talks about a regulatory agency being influenced by the very people and businesses it's tasked with overseeing. The story ran in the Treasure Coast Palms newspaper recently and detailed a trove of emails and meeting notes, which DePriel says shows the South Florida Water Management District diluting new rules about water quality at the behest of a lawyer-turned-lobbyist for U.S. Sugar. And the watering down of those regulations came without the oversight or public hearing that its own scientists and the general public are held to. Here to dive into this story and break down the email trail that he used to piece it all together is TC Palms investigative reporter Lucas DePriel. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Hey, Julie. Thank you for having me on today.
So before we get into your story, I want to set the stage a little bit. What was happening with the South Florida Water Management District in December of 2014? You say that they were on the cusp of introducing new sweeping water pollution rules. What were those about?
The water pollution rules were dictated by a 2007 law from the legislature, NEEPP, Northern Everglades and Estuaries Protection Plan. Essentially, the law called on the South Florida Water Management District to write new regulations for north of Lake Okeechobee. The whole idea was to base them on regulations that exist south of Lake Okeechobee because those regulations south of Lake Okeechobee, granted the system is a little different, but it has shown drastic phosphorus reductions throughout the years. Now, there's like I said, there's a few other components there, but the whole idea was to model the system north, east, and west of the lake on the system that has existed in the south for some time.
So the one that was going in the south for a while had been working, and they were trying to mimic that for the other sides of the lake.
Yes, and the law was passed in 2007, but the reason it took 7 years between 2014, when they were about to start actually writing the regulations, and when the law was passed, is it took them some time to do studies to implement exactly, figure out exactly how these regulations would be implemented, what exactly the rules should look like, and et cetera, et cetera. As you know, the legislature will often say, hey, this is kind of what we want to do, but we're going to turn it over to the water district, which has a trove of excellent scientists. We're going to turn it over to them to let the scientists figure out the nuts and bolts of how exactly this regulation is going to go through.
Is that unusual that the South Florida Water Management District was given that kind of authority?
I wouldn't know. I know that in terms of the rule that replaced it, one of the agencies that is charged with writing some of these rules is the Agriculture Department. I don't know if it's unusual for departments to be charged with writing the specific parts of the regulation, but I have seen a few instances of it. It doesn't seem terribly uncommon for what happened in 2007.
Mm-hmm. So, but what makes your story unique and compelling is that you got a hold of what you and your paper describe as hundreds of emails, Outlook calendar meetings and invitations and other internal documents from the South Florida Water Management District. What did those emails and other documents show about how these proposed new rules were written?
Well, Julie, to answer your first question, the thing that makes the story different is I've had a lot of, whether they're environmentalists or just people who are concerned about the health of our rivers and waters in the area, express very little surprise that this was going on. And the only surprise I've seemed to have heard back from was the fact that there was a paper trail. And getting all of these emails through several public records requests is actually detailing it in writing. We hear people say all the time that, you know, the district and Sugar are close and that they're too close, but there was no real sort of actual hard facts, hard emails to support any sort of such assertion like that. And this is the first time in the last couple of years that I've seen this sort of thing detailed in this level in the emails.
Kind of forensic evidence for the most part. But what did it show?
Well, the email showed first of all, I asked for the emails not just between the lobbyists, but between the scientists and the people who were charged with writing a lot of these regulations. And the lobbyist was one of the few people outside the district, maybe probably the only person who had any sort of say in what ended up happening in these regulations. The only person meeting with them after the public comment period, which that's another part of the story, too, that is worth emphasizing is these rules and regulations are, they're a little bit technical, they're a little bit wonky, but still, the district has a public comment period. It lasts about a month, and it's publicly announced, where anyone, whether you're a lobbyist, whether it's you or me, who are just concerned citizens, can go in and voice concerns about these proposed regulations and say, I would prefer to see this or prefer to see that, but I got a hold of the public comments, and I didn't see any public comments from the lobbyist or from U.S. Sugar.
So they made no public comments, but apparently they made private
comments?
I saw
no evidence they did. Yes. That's what the emails show.
That their comments were made in private.
Correct.
And they made their cases and their statements. And in your article, you point the finger to some edits that were made in the writing of these rules squarely at a sugar lobbyist named Irene Quincy. Who is that?
Irene Quincy is a former South Florida Water Management District attorney who now is a lobbyist for U.S. Sugar, and she's very, very well-versed on the technical parts of regulations. In the emails, sometimes, it's not the first time I've requested emails from the district, and she's often able to go right back and forth with the scientists on the nitty-gritty of regulations and permits. If you're U.S. Sugar, I mean, she sounds like the right person for the job.
So why would a lobbyist be sending emails to scientists that are doing studies on the best way to implement environmental rules?
That is a great question. I called the lobbyist. I reached out to U.S. Sugar. I would have loved to ask them that, but U.S. Sugar issued a statement that we published in the story, but that's not something they had answered in the statement, or I also didn't hear back from the lobbyist. I'd love to ask them that.
But science is science, and if you're doing a test of a certain level of nitrogen, for example, or phosphorus from runoff, those numbers show. Did your emails find any evidence of changing any of these numbers or the science, or did it change the wording that the scientists used in presenting their findings?
Yeah, okay. In terms of the levels of nitrogen and phosphorus, I didn't see any evidence that those numbers were changed. The one scientific report that was removed had a couple numbers in there about nitrogen and phosphorus, not really a whole lot. It didn't seem that the core science of it was changed, but these were little edits here and there. It was, instead of the district will implement this rulemaking, the district will write essentially these regulations. The district will consider doing it. We are still working on these documents to support it. We are still in the process of doing it. When, just a few days before this meeting, actually just hours before this meeting, the rulemaking for that piece of regulation, the process by which they actually start changing the regulations, was on the governing board agenda. And as far as I know, it was taken off before any of the board members saw it. The board members are appointed by the governor, of course, so I don't know if the board members knew anything about this at all.
So, but at one point you say that one of the district's administrators even gave Quincy, the lobbyist, a hard copy of a whole chapter of regulations and asked, in an email, quote, asked for edits, end quote. I mean, they just sent, this is what we think we're going to put together for our regulations. What do you think about this? Any edits you may have? They sent that to a lobbyist.
The meeting you're referring to, you're talking about the deputy administrator brought a hard copy to that interview. I don't know if the lobbyist, I don't know if the deputy administrator presented that copy to the lobbyist, but one of the top Everglades officials at the district said in an email in plain English, which is linked in the article, that this deputy administrator asked for a, quote, list of edits from the lobbyist.
That's giving a lot of power to a lobbyist. In addition to Quincy's role in editing these regulations, you quoted a former scientist with the Kissimmee River Restoration Project who said that his entire study was cut from the final report. What was that study about?
Okay, that study was, earlier I had explained that between 2007 when the law was passed and 2014 when they were going to start writing the rules, that scientist was the one who the district hired to produce the study that would inform the district how specifically to implement these regulations. And that all references to that study were removed. I mean, in the emails we got, they weren't just back and forth, they were attached documents. And in one of the back and forths between the scientists, there's just a whole section where the scientists' three citations. It was three reports, but they were essentially the same thing for different parts of the state, or just were scratched out. References to it were scratched out. The citation was removed. And this was a very expensive study. This was a $650,000 study. And the scientist, Gary Goforth, whom I talked to, said the district still uses some of that information. I talked to a third-party scientist from Kansas, Walter Dodds, who reviewed the report. He said he had no technical issues with the report. Just hours before the meeting with the lobbyists, several scientists at the district who were even one of the co-authors of the chapter that was edited had said there was all the requested changes had been made. There was no serious issues with the report. I can't find any, and I've asked the district point blank, I can't find any serious reason why any scientist or there's any scientific basis for discarding a study.
Is there another basis for why that study might be discarded? Would there be parties that are not fans of that section?
Perhaps. I've asked the Water District that myself, and I haven't. That's not a question they were answering.
So tell me about the governmental program BMAP, the Basin Management Action Plan. In your article, you described it as weaker than other water regulations. And you quote former Florida Governor Bob Graham as saying BMAP has a reputation of not being enforced and not very effective. What is that, and why is it weaker?
Okay, the BMAP program, as it's pronounced, essentially takes an entire watershed. So if you're thinking, let's just say the St. Lucie River, the BMAP there is already implemented. It takes the Roosevelt Bridge, which is our area, right at kind of the estuary point, and says, if we're meeting our nitrogen and phosphorus levels, then we're making some progress. They use a lot of projections to see how far they're going in terms of it, but if the water quality is terrible, like when we had toxic algae blooms last year, the BMAP does not register the fact that we have toxic algae blooms in our water. Even in 2013, when we also had toxic algae blooms, the BMAP report the year after, when they report annually on their progress, said water quality was getting better. Anyone who lives in Martin County will tell you otherwise.
Yeah, it's kind of a non-player when it comes to an emergency situation. So what's been the response so far from U.S. Sugar to your story? Have they given you any formal response or any indication that they've even read it?
I heard back from Judy Sanchez, who's their spokeswoman, and one of the things they pointed out was that the phosphorus reductions south of Lake Okeechobee, which, you know, that's something that's documented, but I found it a little bit ironic that that's one of the positions that Sugar likes to take, and it is documented that phosphorus reductions south of Lake, with the assistance of taxpayer money and stormwater treatment areas, of course, mm-hmm. has reduced phosphorus, but when it came time for the district to expand that system and take that system that they like to tout to a much larger scale, they opposed it.
Yeah, so, I mean, they'll talk about the thing that predates the 2007 push to change and to extend these regulations to other areas, but then not talk about where do these regulations stand right now, the ones that were trying to be enacted in 2014. Are they on the books?
They are working on it. The next step for that is coming in October. However, the way this, we called it the water bill down here. It was in 2016. It overhauled a lot of water regulation in Florida, and it essentially made BMAP that we were talking about earlier, it made BMAP law of the land for the Kissimmee River, Caloosahatchee, and St. Lucie River. So when they do write these regulations, they're not going to mean a whole lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, I look forward to following your reporting. I know you have a lot of emails to continue to go through, so you're probably following a few leads. So we will be keeping up with you and watching what you report, because it's quite interesting. But we're going to have to leave it for there. I want to thank you so much for joining us, reporter Lucas DePriel from the TC Palms newspaper. I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today.
Well, hey, thank you so much, Julie. I appreciate you having me on.
Coming up, a conversation with CFO Jeff Petronas, who spent the morning setting up Florida's urban search and rescue teams ahead of Hurricane Irma. He also oversees the state's regulation on insurance agents, so he has some valuable advice for preparing you and your belongings for the storm. That's coming up next.